I'd like to go back a little bit with reference to the matter of tolerance. And I am so much aware of it because I've gone through two stages, both personally and professionally, with reference to intolerance. And when I see what's going on today, I can't believe my eyes and my ears because, as I indicated a little while ago, intolerance is practically unknown. Just let me give you an example. I was member of an important committee of the medical school, and we had our first meeting at the university club. We sat around, everybody had a few drinks, and we discussed whatever had to be discussed. And then when the meeting was over, the chairman, who was a very wonderful mind, Dr. Caldwell, devoid of any intolerance whatsoever, and he was the old school, he was very tolerant in the days when everybody else was intolerant. The chairman said, well, we'll have our next meeting whenever it was, and I guess we might as well have it here. And everybody said, you know, sure, but no vote or anything. And Alec, Dr. Caldwell, saw me, and he noticed that I was not pleased. And he said, Leo, do you have any exception to that? Would you rather meet someplace else? And then he said, oh, my God. He says, I know. If I were in Leo's place, I wouldn't want to meet here anyhow. I wouldn't want to meet here myself. Let's meet at the children's or wherever it was. So this sort of a thing was the beginning of the development of tolerance. And I think if you counted the number of Jews on the faculty of the School of Medicine, which are the most restrictive of all, I'm guessing now, but I bet one-third of the faculty is Jewish. And that represents fairly prominent professional positions.
Do you think Pittsburgh is different today than it used to be socially?
Well, really, not having been very too active and too prominent socially, I'm not in any position to state. But I think that the Concordia Club, the clubs that I know, and the Country Club, have done a great deal to bring the community, the Jewish community, together. People meet each other, they get to know each other, they may not be close friends, but they share their experiences. And that, with respect to this form of activity, I think these social clubs have fulfilled a very definite purpose in the community.
Do you see any a big difference in Pittsburgh culturally than today?
Oh, unquestionably so. For example, more people, with reference to certainly the Jewish community, I remarked the other night, the symphony concert seemed to me like at least one-fourth of the audience was Jewish. They support cultural activities such as the symphony, the ballet, the lectures that are given at Y and elsewhere. I think there has been definite progress made culturally in which the Jewish community has played a rather important role.
Well, what about politically? Do you see much difference in people's interest in politics between today and
yes,
years
I
ago?
Yes, I think so. I think that the Jew by nature is inclined to be a liberal. I think that my friends, people that I've had contact with, have been certainly a great deal more active in political affairs than they have been previously. I know I have been, not active in the sense that I would go out and solicit, but in voting and talking about what's going on and being aware of what is happening.
Do you see any change environmentally? Much change?
Environmentally meaning what? Well, I think the Jewish community has been more affluent. I think that the present generation in the Jewish community can afford more things. They do more things. They travel more. They take an active part in whatever other things are going on. And there has been certainly a tremendous change in the participation of the Eastern Jew in communal affairs. Of course, the reason for that is perfectly obvious, that the German Jew has simply disappeared from the picture, or practically disappeared from the picture.
What we're interested in talking about, too, is Pittsburgh, aside from the Jewish community, how you think Pittsburgh has changed, or grown, or not grown,
Well, I can only speak with some authority with reference to medicine, because I certainly am not competent to give more than an impression. I think Pittsburgh has made a tremendous amount of progress, generally speaking. I think that perhaps the individuals who are in charge of our business and political activities have not done too much to help Pittsburgh develop as a big center. I think, in a sense, Pittsburgh is becoming less, there's less of an inducement for the young people to come and develop and settle in Pittsburgh than it is to settle in other communities, because Pittsburgh, this is only an impression, has been stagnant commercially and politically. Now, professionally, that is not true, because the School of Medicine has made tremendous progress. The health center has been a step in the right direction. It reflects itself. Its activities are reflected not only in the care of the sick, because I think the sick people are getting better care because of that, but also educationally, in putting out the young men who, whether they settle in Pittsburgh or elsewhere, and many of them don't settle in Pittsburgh, unfortunately, are going to reflect on the good education that they have.
How do you view your accomplishments, your successes, your failures?
Oh, looking I over think as a your woeful life. Inadequate. Woefully inadequate. I must confess that I have done, I always say that I'm doing and have done the only thing that I would want to do, and the most miraculous thing about it is I'm getting paid for doing it.
But in what way?
Well, I think that perhaps, you see, during my period of development, as I indicated before, full-time academic faculty was not available in Pittsburgh or in many other medical schools except Harvard and Yale and Hopkins and a few other schools. Full-time academicians in clinical medicine were not known. The men who taught medicine were well-known professionally, they were well-trained, but they had to practice, and they shared their time between practice and teaching. Now, if I have to do it over again, I think that I would want to centralize my efforts in academic activities, but not forgetting the sick patient. Unfortunately, that isn't always true. The man who develops an academic medicine loses sight of the fact that the only reason for being a physician is to heal the sick. And he has very little compassion and regard for the sick individual.
But when you were practicing medicine, you had no choice.
I had no choice. That's exactly
therefore,
right.
Therefore, in no way
so
could it
So I did the best
lack...
that I could, right. Because I spent half of my time in academic medicine, half of the time, and maybe that wasn't really too bad. Perhaps I could have written more. I could have become, perhaps, I don't know, or my ability would have helped me, better known nationally. But I think life doesn't owe me anything.
You say that you would have preferred to spend more of your time in academic
yes.
work and less in private practice.
Well, not often. Less in private practice, but more in academic activities. In other words, more in research, more in clinical investigation.
What do you think was your greatest success?
Finding Merlin.
Besides finding Merlin.
Professionally.
Well, the satisfaction of taking care of people who come to see me, being aware of not only their medical problems, but their emotional problems as well, and feeling that the educational background that I have had makes me competent, in my opinion, to do as much for them as I can do.
Is there any failures that you looked on back on?
Oh, yes, sure, there are failures, of course. No one ever achieves the goal that it sets out to do. Early in my development, I was impetuous, impulsive, impatient as a youngster, and perhaps I could have had a little more rapid professional development if I had been a little less impatient.
Is there anything that you'd like to add to tell us about that we haven't asked you?
No, I think that I've talked too much already.
Not at all. Not at all.
I made some notes, but I think we covered
normal.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit about why you feel you have such a psychological interest in the patient and their well-being, their general total well-being.
Well, in the first place, no physician is worth his salt forgets the fact that patients are people. And if he's going to do a patient any good and get any satisfaction out of it, he's got to know the individual patient and realize the patient's emotional problems, his disappointments, his goals, his suffering, his family life, that sort of thing. Now, being a Jew, I think the Jew is, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I think the Jew is inclined to take a deeper interest in emotional things, in emotional life for his acquaintances, his friends, his patients in this case. Then too, throughout my medical school, I earned my keep by working at what was then known as the Mayview Hospital, a city hospital for a psychiatric hospital. They had a general hospital too. And I spent 4 years, including the summers, there. And I got an insight as to what psychological problems affect people, including psychiatric problems, and had contact with a very wonderful mind, you know, Dr. McInnes, who was the chief there. And we'd sit around and talk for many hours about his insight and his interest in emotional problems. Then I came to realize that that this business of treating people as inanimate objects and not realizing that whether they have objective or organic disease or not, that their emotional life has a profound effect on not only on their symptoms, but on the degree of success that you're going to have in treating that patient. Some of my most grateful patients are not patients that I made a brilliant diagnosis, and I didn't make too many brilliant ones, or have succeeded in treating successfully because of organic disease, but patients who found an opportunity to ventilate their problems and see the relationship of their problems to their symptoms.
Thank you very much. This has been most interesting.
Welcome.